Again, good morning, everybody, and compliments of the new year. Same to you. Hey, what a way of starting 2018. It's a very bad way of starting 2018. This is going to be a very long year. So we better start it properly. And welcome to every one of us. Happy to see you again. I hope you did have a very good holiday, if you had. And congratulations to the party that had a conference. The Party of South Africans, African National Congress. Well done in your conference. You made South Africans proud, and you disappointed the few. There were those who thought there would be blood on the floor of that conference, and I didn't see anything like blood on TV as I was watching. All I saw was a united organization. I wish all organizations can be like that. We are waiting for conferences of other political organizations. They must learn on what we have seen on TV. Congratulations again. A few people were elected NEC members in that. I know Honorable Van Damme is the national figure in her party. Now I know that Mr. Gungubele is in the national executive of his party. Congratulations, sir. And I know that Minister Kubai Ngubane is also in the National Executive. Congratulations to you, ma'am. It's a pity the Deputy Minister is not here. She is also part of the National Executive. And I think I had to do this so that, because I will do it again when there are other conferences as the chair of the committee. Welcome, Minister, and I want to say a few things up front, honorable members, that sometime last year, as this committee, we had instructions from the Deputy Speaker to conduct some investigation emanating from outer report to investigate some activities of the former Minister Mutambi. That letter was communicated to the committee, and by the end of last year, as the chair, I promised that it's the matter that we're going to handle this time of the year, the first time of the year. And I think it will be proper that in our meeting, not this one, in one or two meetings to come, put that matter on the table so that we can process it, do the necessary things to get an advice, as we are trying to do from legal and all of that, and then we can agree on a date to proceed with all those issues. That's one issue. The second issue that I committed as the chair to do was the issue of MDDA, because there was this strong view from members that we must investigate MDDA. not necessarily the history of the chair, because I think the history of the chair was explained by the activities within MDDA itself. And for sure, in the next one or two meetings, it's one of the issues that we'll have to finalize as the committee, so that we can act swiftly on those two matters. So they'll reflect in our draft program as this committee on communications. I felt I must address those two issues so that they are at the table in our next meeting and propose a process of how we are going to deal with it. That was by way of welcoming the members of the portfolio committee as well as our guests and the Department of Communication. The agenda is in front of you, members. And I just want to deal with apologies. The matters that I started with will be dealt with in the next meeting. Honorable Van Dijk, as an apology is assigned to do some party work, so the apology says. Honorable Mohamed Salah has a doctor's appointment. Who is this? Okay, just that I don't know Mutlaucha. I know Mutlaucha. There is an apology. I hope it's a written apology. Just to finish, members, first I see a by short here that says Honorable Van Dam will have to leave at 12. Is that so, Honorable Member? Honorable Van Dam will leave at 12. There is a letter from Mr. Mutlaucha. It says here, there is no reason provided, but there is an apology. It's an SMS. It's an SMS to you. There is an SMS, but I think the department is here. The minister will do the necessary things in relation to that one. Yes, that's all, but I am reliably informed that Ms. Libby Lloyd passed on Thursday, and I think all of us know who Ms. Libby Lloyd was. She was in MDDA at some stage and did wonderful work there. Libby Lloyd passed on. And before we get to other issues, we'll have to just stand up and for a moment of silence. Thank you very much. Whilst we are on apologies, I'll have to hear members accepting or not accepting the apologies, but I'll leave the issue of Mr. Mutlaucha when the minister is starting her own presentation, because she will have to say a number of things before that. Honorable Moss.
As part of the apologies, we have as well requested to be released at 11 o'clock for another meeting of the Public Enterprises Portfolio Committee with Honorable Gungwe.
you will have to discuss between the two of you who will remain and will go. But one of you must remain here. So you'll have to deal with that. Unfortunately, the meetings clash. And we need one of you in this meeting. Thank you very much. Honorable, maybe I must say Comrade Matisha. The honorable thing is too long.
Yes,
Comrade Matisha.
Thank you. I too had sent a message already. And in actual fact, one was not even supposed to be around. But then I thought it would be tabled. Thanks.
Yeah, no, it was tabled because I'm sure they saw you here and then they deleted that.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I think we are ready now to start. Agreed? Hand over to you, Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much, Chair. I would request if we are not done by 1, I go to the doctor, I can go and come back. I do have an appointment to see the doctor. And good morning, colleagues, and thank you very much, Chair, for giving us this opportunity to come here and compliments. Firstly, indeed, Chair, just to confirm the issue of Libby Lloyd, she's been buried today, but the sector memorial service is tomorrow at Gold Reef City. Those who are able to attend, has the sector memorial service of Libby Lloyd is tomorrow. She's been buried a private funeral today. Up front, Chair, let me start. I think you did highlight the issue of Mr. Mhlaloga. Let me just highlight, just to be precise, on Friday, Mr. Mhlaloga was convicted in the magistrate court on fraud and corruption issues. After learning that, because it happened Friday, we got the message towards the end of Friday. By yesterday, we tried to get hold of the judgment. We were informed that the judgment will only be ready tomorrow. Once the judgment is ready, we'll be able to write formally to Parliament because Parliament is the appointing authority to deal with the matter. But I have requested to see Mr. Mhlaloga tomorrow as well so that I can engage him as a minister responsible. So that's where the issue is. The Act is very precise and clear in terms of if there is a conviction. So we'll have to follow the law and do what is absolutely necessary. So I thought, let me just be upfront, Chair, in terms of that, hence he's not here today because of that matter. Secondly, Chair, thank you very much. We are presenting matters in terms of the BDM project. But again, I want to thank you for acceding to my request to take the committee on board on the matters of the appointment processes in SABC. To that extent, I hope, because I did this without consulting you, I will not be in trouble for extending the invite to the chair of the board of SABC and the HR chair, because I just felt that it's important that every time when there are matters affecting an entity, that entity is there, because that's I would really want. I work in a very transparent manner. So, yeah, I forgot to formally write to the chair and request that permission. And we'll, when we come to the agenda item, we'll deal with it. On the BDM project, Chair, let me upfront say that it was very interesting when we were preparing for the presentation. Actually realized that the last presentation on this project was done when I was the chair of the committee. It was done. We had requested that briefing. So we tried to bring up, not to take too long, but to bring a lot of critical information for the portfolio committee to be informed of where the project is. Now, upfront, Chair, I think even in the media space, the question has been to me, will you be able to deliver the project on time? The first question is, if I'm given the necessary resources, yes, we will. You look at our budget in the process. It's very short. The deadline of June 2019 is not a self-imposed deadline. It's ITU deadline. So we need to meet that. And our appeal to our colleague in finance and national treasury was that let's find mechanism to fund this project so that we can migrate. We think we have been able to put in place all mechanisms to be able to migrate, and you'll pick it up on the presentation, Chair. Now, the second issue that I think I need to upfront speak to is the issue of encryption and non-encryption. You'd note that, Chair, in terms of government policy, a policy was passed in terms of the encryption matter, non-encryption matter, and there's been a call to say there's a need to review that policy. Now, what has been an issue for us is that there is a constitutional court judgment that speaks to the matter that makes it a bit complicated for us. And maybe we can have another meeting, Chair, just to focus on those areas in detail. We didn't bring the court judgment. Have the court judgment in front of us so that we can be all of us on the same page to say, do we interpret it the same way? Because from what I got as legal opinion was the interpretation to say the court judgment didn't speak only to the process, but also made a pronouncement around government not using public funds to fund commercial interests. And that's why I'm saying that might need a more detailed discussion so that we can take each other on board, because I might be talking here and honorable members don't have in front of them the court judgment. That's one. But the other issue, Chair, that we want to flag as well, you'd note, and I remember this was even when I was still a chairperson of telecoms, there was some investigation around the project itself in terms of the conduct of some officials at USASA. And then there was a investigation in terms of the manufacturers themselves. But again, I need to highlight that Competition Commission has also come in. There have been investigation collusion in terms of the project. And we are expecting a report quite soon in terms of that. I have received a letter from the Competition Commission that requested us not to proceed with any procurement around that, and therefore there seemed to be some level of need for answers from the people who were involved in the project. So we'll wait for that report. It will guide us as well. But we are not waiting completely, because if you look at the presentation, I just want to highlight, what we are worried about is to get the nation on board on the project, one. So we'll announce a start date and an end date of registration. So it can continue to be an open-ended. But part of the issues that we had to do is to put a project plan in place, and then the acting DG will deal with that. Put the project plan in place, but put a project office. We literally now have an office, a boardroom, we call it the war room for DTT. I meet with the entire team across the value chain. We have representative of Treasury, we have representative of DTI, we have representative of all the entities that are impacted on the project. Every Monday, 7 o'clock, we've made that commitment, because we say the delay on the project necessitates for us that we can't treat it as normal anymore. So that is part of just saying, let's get this on the ball, let's get running. And so that weekly, there is a report, we tick. There's this task that needs to be done this week. Once it's done, we come back on Monday and say, tick, this is what we've done. So we think we are now ready in terms of our work. Chair, out of the rollout in the SK area, there are lessons that we have learned. Lessons learned is that we anticipated 23,000 households to be registered. We ended up with 26. This is because the policy says you are migrating TV-owning households. Now, when communities hear that there's this project that the government is involved in, those 3,000 households which did not have a TV went and purchased a TV either in a pawn shop and all that. Now you ended up with an obligation to cover them as well. So what we have done in the process of review, which you'll see, I want to speak to this because you might see the numbers changing. I don't want people to think that maybe we are not understanding what we do. So out of that experience, we went back to StatsSA to say then, give us the figures in terms of how many households do we have in the country, one, how many households are earning 3,200 and below in the country. Then we were given a figure overall, and then we said, out of that as well, how many households are TV-owning? Now, if you look at that, households that are TV-owning that are earning 3,200 and below are almost 5 million. That if, but you are into include those who do not own a TV, then you come to 7 million households. So that's the real figures that we're looking at. We had to go and ask for a legal opinion. Are we obligated as the department to also cover this 2 million that doesn't have TV households? The legal opinion says yes, we are obligated. Because some of the areas, not that people don't want to have TV, they have not had a TV because there's not been a signal in the area. Therefore, they did not bother to have a TV. So with this migration, if you have a set-top box and you are in that area, you receive signal. So those people, we assume they will have an interest in having TV. Therefore, it will put an obligation on us. So that figure has changed. So that's why I'm upfront explaining it, Chair, so that colleagues can understand where there will be changes. And fortunately, that's why I'm saying the last presentation that was done in Parliament for both the committees, I'm pulling from that in looking at the issues. I think I will allow Chair, the acting DG, together with the project manager, to take us through the project, the presentation. I think they will share. I'm not so sure. They will share amongst themselves in terms of who takes that, and then we can respond to the questions. Thanks. Maybe let me say up front, we've got Mr. TT as the acting DG of the department, Chairperson. We are of cognizance of the consensus of the committee around the appointment process. We are really trying to rush getting that, but there are some challenges that we have. Mr. Thabiso TT, THITITT.
Thanks, Chair. The presentation will have the following. One is the high-level overview, which is mainly a reflection from what was last presented and what has been achieved so far. We'll then look in terms of the set-top box procurement and distribution, implementation, rollout phases, challenges and mitigating factors, the roadmap towards achieving the deadline of 2019, and reflect on the risks and issues associated with us meeting the target of 2019 as anticipated. And it will be just presentation on the funding requirements, and we'll talk about some of the key enablers. Honorable Chair, on the issue of the transmission network, which was supposed to have been presented in the previous time, is that the assessment that we made was that from the 87.3% of South Africans will be able to receive DTT, and the balance of 12.7 will be covered through DTH. And in terms of the digital broadcast content, there are all three channels of SABC and their news who are live on the DTT. And we have also additional channels from ETV. And furthermore, there are 18 radio stations that will be able to be accessed through the completion of the process. In the previous engagement, the issue was around the compliance with the National Bureau of Standards
from the manufacturer side, it was ensured and double checked that they all complied with the published standards, and therefore we were in a position to roll out the subsidized set-top boxes distribution in some of the areas. Key issues to consider is that there's a total of about 15.1 million households, and out of that, 12 million of them are owning sets, TV sets. And out of that, the government committed to migrate about 5 million with subsidization of set-top box kits and installation. And we then discovered that there's an additional 2.5 million households owning TV sets that do not qualify and were not included in the previous statistical presentations. And in addition to that, which Minister reflected on, is that there is an additional of 3 million households who do not own TV sets who needs to be considered for the migration. In terms of the budget, 2.5 that was allocated, 2.45 billion that was allocated, only 1.5 million set-top box kits and installation and all through the value chain could be afforded. USASA has ordered the 1.5 between 2014 and 2015. And to date, 851,720,000 kits have been delivered and they are warehoused at SAPO. And out of that, there are about 475 that are outstanding and the rest have been rolled out. And so far, we have covered almost 563,677 registrations. The number might appear to be insignificant, but this is because of the following reasons. The first phase was to cover the SK area. The second one was to cover the borderline area. And now we're moving into national rollout after we have covered those, because those are the key issues that were very critical at the time. In terms of the SK area, we've managed to cover 23,661 installation. And in that particular area, in the SK area, the analog broadcast has been switched off. In terms of taking the process forward in terms of the rollout plan, we have developed three phases. One is the short term, medium term, and long term. In terms of the first term, we need to clear the already procured set-top boxes that are in the SAPO warehouses, but the target will be around the predominantly flat provinces along borders of Free State and Northwest, and also continue with registration of indigent families to ensure that at least by June we have integrated data that we are going to work on to include the second phase and third phase. In terms of the medium term, we need to look at acquiring some of the additional DTH decoders, because there are some areas where we have DTH signal processes being concluded, but the only outstanding issues are around the set-top boxes. In the long term, we need to reflect on the new procurement of devices to ensure that we cover the remainder of the provinces. And we need to ensure that we conclude the rollout of the remainder in the borderland and inland by June 2019. In terms of the challenges, we have serious issues around resources that Minister alluded to a point where we have been juggling between different entities to seek assistance to ensure that some of the processes are not halted. The absence of DTH devices is one of them that we'll be looking at to ensure that we address it as quick as we can. But some of the challenges what Minister spoke about in terms of project management, where we had not clarified the start and end of registration to the public to ensure that we can have real integrated data to ensure that our planning is done correctly to meet the deadline of 2019. In terms of implementation and dealing with some of the challenges, what we have done so far is to develop a broader coordination mechanism and partnership with some of the entities to ensure that we can align and better coordinate the resources to meet the deadline. We have started the discussions around soliciting advice on the new procurement model to look into what the Competition Commission have raised before. We have also developed a fast-tracking mechanism with intensified awareness program through various platforms to ensure that we increase both registration and include some of the key stakeholders in the process. What we are going to do further is to look in terms of the use of existing qualified installers with the collaboration with the municipalities to ensure that there's ownership of the process, and also to fast-track the completion of the training with DPW on the installer program. Minister raised certain issues that I think we need to look at, which are around, one, the constitutional issues, and two, the technological challenges or technological evolution. One of the key issues is that while the current scheme takes care of indigent households, it to some extent have an exclusive element to it, where you cannot cover for those who only have TVs and exclude those who don't have TVs. Because of importance is to ensure that we create or afford universal access of information to all that require to get it. That comes to a point where, out of the previous assessment, we got to understand that there are 3.1 million households without television sets who needs to be covered in the whole set of boxes and digital migration. Other challenges that we might have to look at and manage them carefully is around the realities that the current analog services is gradually being phased out throughout the world. There are certain considerations. For instance, we have digital TV becoming one of the de facto technology for consumers. And we also have integrated digital television sets emerging as a default choice for viewing by others. And on the basis of that, it is therefore proposed that we have a consideration to issue ID TVs for poor households who currently don't have TV sets in place of set-top boxes, because you'll then be addressing two issues. One is a provision of a set for universal access, and also provision of content through the set-top boxes. It is also being proposed that we consider the current TV owning houses to ensure that the subsidy covers those eligible, and also we ensure that in that particular process, we come up with a policy decision to say whether are we looking at the set-top boxes to continue, or we're going to look at IDTVs as an alternative. In terms of how we are going to move process going forward, we have developed a public-private partnership process where we collaborate with the private sector, commercial broadcasters to expedite the implementation rollout. We are going to engage with them to utilize their distributing channels and marketing platforms of the industry to boost both registration and rollout. We have also started engaging with the TV manufacturers to ensure that there could be consideration of production of low-cost ID TVs to ensure that we can cover what we need to look in terms of those indigent and those who don't have TVs. In terms of some of the issues that we are going to look at is to, with some of our partners, is to look in terms of how do we create education and public awareness campaigns, and also how do we strengthen the distribution networks, which mainly have to be credible and auditable, so that we ensure that through those particular networks, those who ought to receive are in actual fact those who are supposed to receive the DTT subsidies. One of the issues is that the overall objective is to migrate households beyond 85% threshold across the country through government subsidy to enable switch off of analog services in line with the 2019 deadline, and to ensure that in our policy approach we include procurement and installation of the remaining 3.5 million households that were not covered before. And also augmenting of department resources by means of enhancing the private public partnership in areas of marketing and human resource management. And what we are going to do now as new institutional arrangement is that the minister will announce the registration period for the qualifying households. That will be done through a number of media platforms. We'll ensure that the local registration teams and installers on the ground are in areas where the local municipalities and some of the key stakeholders at different levels participate in the whole process. And we'll also ensure that we strengthen the oversight mechanism in ensuring that the process is smooth and it does not exclude anyone, in collaboration with other stakeholders. Of importance is that we need to reflect on the funding for project management, public education and consumer awareness to assist CENTEC with their own dual elimination processes, establishment of the contact center to ensure that those who apply and when they need to follow up, they have an entry and exit point of information, procurement of migration devices for both IDTVs and set-top boxes, distribution of devices and installation of devices and activation of services in all the areas. Chair and honorable members, there's the summary of our budget. In total, what we need to date is 6,602,000,000 for us to be able to conclude the whole digital migration for 2019 June. There are certain things that I think we need to reflect on, that we need to ensure that they are in place. That, for instance, the funding of the procurement process needs to be concluded before June 2018, and we also need to ensure that we deliver the first batch of devices in line with our project plan starting in July 2018. We also need to ensure that we create a clear and simple message for targeted audience to ensure that everyone who ought to hear the message about registration are part of the messaging. We're going to use community radio station, television platforms, and where possible, we're going to ensure that the private sector assists us with resources such as marketing material to ensure that we communicate to those who need to get the message. We're going to get promotion material with clear digital migration message with start date to end date throughout government platforms. We're going to use community development workers for registration of household through local registration. And we're going to create a reliable database and adequate number of installers through partnership with the local municipalities, as I've indicated. Thank you.
Thanks, Acting DG. Anything, Minister? Members?
We are fine, we'll take this.
Yeah. I think we'll engage on the presentation. But on the issues of informing the citizens on what we're doing, I hear the public education and consumer awareness and your desire to partner with a number of people. But are there no other avenues whilst you are engaging those people? For instance, there is Parliament. One of the issues that we rely on is what you are doing, because as you speak now, you speak to the public, except that you are very soft. So that what you say is beamed out there. So if we can also check what can we do with Parliament resources of communication, I think for me it will assist as you are trying to deal with the other private people. You are communication, so you really need to communicate what we are we are trying to do as the department. Members? Any question, Honorable Van Dijk? Van Dam, sorry.
Thank you, Chair. Minister, just a question about Mr. Mohlaloga. So what is his current status now? Has he been serving as the chair? Because Parliament approved the appointment in November. So I wasn't clear about what's happened since then. Has he been at work? Has he been drawing a salary? Where is he now? I understand that you're waiting for the judgment and you want to meet with him. I understand that. I just want to understand where he is right now. And then about DTT, I think the Constitutional Court dealt with the process around the policy making. So it said that Minister Mutambi was right to change the policy because policy making rests with the executive. So it wasn't up to the court to define what the policy should be. It should be, the court said it should be up to the executive. Now, I think it's very important that clarity is given about your position on digital migration, because it's very clear that the Minister Mutambi had a specific position, then Minister Dlodlo came in and she had a different position. So right now we're not very clear about what's going to happen. So I think it's very important for you as the current minister to be very clear about whether it will be encrypted or unencrypted. The court did not say which process must be followed in that regard. They said it's up to the executive to make policy.
Any other hand? Honorable Teddy and Honorable Trachan.
Thank you. Let me welcome the presentation, but just to get clarity on some few issues, Chair, with regard to DTT. The first one is with regard to that proposal that current TV owning subsidy eligible households be afforded a choice between a subsidized STB or IDTV. And the question that comes to my mind is, what about those who have already, set-top boxes as of now? What is going to be the situation with regard to that choice that you are proposing? The second one, Chair, talks to the issue that we have always been raising. Because every time we meet at this level, the issue of funding arises. I think at the level of, given the seriousness of the project, we might have to take a decision, perhaps at the portfolio committee, to have a session with Treasury and deal with this particular challenge. I was looking at the breakdown in terms of how much is required to roll out the whole project. Obviously, the minister will have to assist in terms of what do we have for now and what else is required to effectively roll out the whole project. But all I'm saying is that there is a need, Chair, to this time around to agree on a meeting with Treasury to deal with this particular challenge. Surely we can't afford to miss the 30 June 2019 target as I let it. The second last one is the implications of the dual illumination rollout to Centec, because when I look at the presentation, there are some implications in terms of Centec with regard to the process of dual illumination. If you can as well just try and clarify that particular aspect. Looking at the phases there, with phase one, I only see the June 2018 as the target that has been set, but I don't see the starting date in terms of when are we starting with that particular phase. with the rest of the phases 2 and 3. It's very clear as to when are we starting and when are we likely to end. So I would appreciate if you can just be clarified as to when exactly are we starting with phase 1. Thanks, Chair.
Okay.
Greetings to everybody and compliments of the season. And thank you for the presentation. Firstly, public information. I have said it previously and I'm going to say it again. I would like that the public information be spread as wide as possible. Why I'm asking is that people who are deaf don't have access to your information, whether it's on TV or any other kind of information. So I would like access, particularly to TV, must be subtitled, or there must be an interpreter, or in terms of registration, how to get set-top boxes, all those messages. And also people with disabilities, pensioners, they receive well below the 3,200 rand income. So they should also qualify, but maybe they don't receive this information. So I would like to request, in terms of public information, please let it go out as wide as possible, including people with disabilities. And I'd like to know who assists with the registration process. Is it SAPO? Because you said the community workers, but community workers are not all over, and they don't have access to all people. So who is responsible to do the registration? The resources, the devices, it's still analog. So, for example, the Centec devices and SABC devices, are they still analog? Do they also still need to be digitalized? And then in the budget on slide 13, the technology and technology support, or there's another line item, somewhere, does that include the entities that need to be digitalized, or is that a separate amount? And which means that everything related to digital migration, would it be then more than the 6 billion? Or if you could just give me clarity on that, thank you.
Can we take that before we go to other hands? Thank you.
I shall start, and the colleagues will assist or introduce it. Just to Chair, I think we take your advice. We will definitely enhance our communication, and I think Dr. Mutuvi will come in detail on what we have currently tried to do, and it also speaks to what Honourable Member Yvonne Drachen has just raised on issue of subtitle. I think he will come to that one. Honourable Fandam, Mr. Mutaluga did take office, has started, because after the process of Parliament, we did do formal appointments. I had to write to the President, and then we waited for that, and then we got, once the Speaker wrote to us after the decision by Parliament. So he was officially appointed, and he had taken oath of office, and that's why it has to be a process now. On the issue of policy position, I think we misunderstanding. Policy position can be based on an individual. That's my understanding. I can't speak for the colleagues who passed. I'll speak for myself. Policy position is not based on an individual. It's based on either a governing party will say, this is what we stand for, and then it translates to government. Now, the current policy position, as per government, speaks to non-encryption. Hence, I said earlier on, Chair, that we asked for a legal opinion on the judgment. And what I got, hence I said, I'm open so that we can engage, perhaps maybe get various views on the interpretation of the judgment. Yes, while the court has said the process lies with government, the executive authority, to define policy or the executive to define policy. But it did, there is where they have pronounced on the need for government, almost cautioning government not to utilize public funds to the benefit of commercial interest. And that's what, when the legal opinion came back and gave the interpretation. Hence, I said, I'm open for us to engage fully in terms of that share, because that's how we're interpreting it. And if it's a different opinion, we can sit and look at it, and so that we're all on the same page. Look, for me, where I'm sitting, Chair, the importance is for us to migrate. I would really want to get out of the space where they're still, hence I'm willing to say, let's sit, engage, and see what is it that we can help so that we can have the migration moving. Because if we speak past each other or we start standing that side, and I also don't want you to engage, we might end up fighting new court judgment, then the country suffers. So the engagement for interpretation and everything will help us broadly, not only myself, but the whole country, so that we can see progress. So that's where I think it's important. I think the team will take other issues. Let me just speak to the implication on dual illumination, Honorable Sadie. I think they will come to other issues. We currently spending on both analog and digital, because Centec is done. And it's almost as if Centec is being punished for being efficient. Because when the time frames were put, Centec went and met their targets and made sure that they are ready on time. Now, because we've not prepared the nation in terms of households to be on digital platforms, now they can switch off analog because we're still utilizing analog devices. But the danger of it is that Centec's analog system is degenerating. And if we do not migrate, that's one of the risks. If we do not migrate, it's going to need to be upgraded. It's more costs that we have not worked out now. So meaning we might end up with more than 6 billion that we are requesting. Hence, we are very cognizant to say we have to move now, because there are consequences, huge consequences on that. And maybe coming to the issue of what Honorable Neville Drachen raised around the devices, we separated the project itself from broadcasting. So this budget does not include SABC's readiness. When we come to the point, because from our side is to deal with the whole project for the whole country, meaning the whole value chain. How do we speak to non-subsidized market? How do we get them ready? How do we ensure that those which are subsidized market, we get them ready? Once we do that, one of the things that we said we're going to do in the coming few weeks is to engage the broadcasting. The broadcasters to say, this is what we're going to do. Because part of what we are trying to do is to bring even partnership. Can all the broadcasters have a logo, yeah, go digital, all of them, so that we start promoting, because all of them are impacted upon. We engage in the private sector in terms of mobile network operators. They ask, they need to benefit as operators in the country in terms of once we migrate the spectrum release. Are they able to come into the party and assist? So we're looking at partnership to close certain gaps, and it should be able to assist. So that's why we've put this budget to say these are the things that we are. I mean, I can tell you now, in terms of project office management cost, we literally have nothing, for example. And we're utilizing more the department's money and redirecting funds to try and manage some of the work. It's not enough. Public awareness, we're doing it through Invisos, we're doing through radio. The other day we did connect to all community radio stations, Chair, where we were talking about this digital migration, trying to speak to the nation, but to ordinary South Africans through their community radio stations, to be able to speak about this. Post office remains the point of registration for all people who are qualifying. So we're trying, but we are upping the communication method. That's one of the costs that is really affected if you are to, because it means because we are marketing a product, some of them, we're trying to find partnership, but in other areas we have to buy space. So I think Dr. Mutuvi as well and Mr. Titi will cover other issues. I can come in if there's anything that we do not. So the budget is basically for what we have lined up there in terms of what needs to happen. Part of why we're pushing for phase one to happen, it has started already, because we are incurring warehouse costs. So we want to reduce those costs in terms of distribution, because we have 600, as the acting DG has said, 600,000 of set-top boxes sitting in the warehouse waiting to do. So we want to push for them to be done by February so that the cost that is associated with them in the warehouse is reduced.
Thanks. I think the one question is of phase one. Phase one started last week. Currently, the team is in Northwest, and they'll be moving to Free State in terms of rollout. So I hope it covers that part. I think it's mainly support in terms of registration, awareness, and ensuring that immediately when we're done with that part, then they will come the second part where they come and install. Because what we have done in the past week was to conclude the training with DPW to ensure that we have sufficient installers, because it's one thing to have a number of set-top boxes and it's another to have a number of installers to install those set-top boxes to meet the deadline. So the training with DPW is finalized now, and once we have concluded the first part of registration and verification, the installers will then come into install whatever that needs to be installed in those particular areas. As I said, they are in Northwest now, and they'll then move into Free State in the next week or so. In terms of what we have as a current budget, we've been allocated $25 million for 2018 to 2019, which is absolutely insignificant. And for 2019-2020, we are allocated $32 million for it. So there's a huge shortfall, and I think that's why there's a need for an engagement to ensure that there is sufficient budgeting to ensure that we meet the deadline of 2019 June. In terms of the question of the registration, I think Minister covered it, but we ensure that where SAPO is, we have put sufficient resources to assist SAPO. One model that we have applied is that before we go into a particular area, we engage with the local municipality. They assist us with information in that particular area, and we go into communication, messaging together, so that by the days allocated for registration, there's an increased awareness, and there's a lot of people who are coming to register to ensure that we have our numbers increased and we can be able to roll out the process. I think the rest of the questions Minister has covered them. Public awareness, the project.
Thanks, Minister. Chair. To ensure that we achieve efficiency in terms of the registration process on the ground, we have established, through the engagement with provincial government, we have established steering committees at district and local municipality levels with the intent to achieve two objectives. One, that we have reliable data through the use of community development workers that have been assigned to work with us by different local municipalities. And secondly, to fast-track the installation process, we are currently generating database of local installers so that we do not go to Gauteng and get somebody from Gauteng to do installations in Free State or Northwest. That is the process that we are of the view, and we are testing that in Northwest this week, that local installers are assigned a particular block or a village or a street to run with the installation processes. That will reduce and assist in the process of any defects or consumer assistance where there are challenges in terms of maybe if the device happened to be malfunctioning. You have somebody along the street, somebody local, to quickly come and fix and deal with the problem. Because the current situation or the previous situation that we had was that we would have installation companies coming from different area to different area. When there's a problem in the household, because, for an example, Chair, you have an old aged lady at 66, 65 years. When they're busy cleaning, they pull out the RC cables, and the television cannot play going forward. If you have somebody around there who's an installer, they quickly run and fix the problem. So in partnership with the local and district municipalities, which we are getting support from the provincial governments, we are happy to report, Chair, that we are beginning to see improvement in the process that we built, that has built confidence to us that if we have necessary resources, we'll be able to achieve the deadline as prescribed by the minister.
Okay. By the way, it can also be an old man, not old lady. Honorable Machoba.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. A follow-up question, Chair. In the issue of installation, I'm a little bit confused, though the presentation is very clear about who's going. In page 14, actually, they are talking about the database and adequate number of installers to service their local municipalities. Who's going to manage all the process of the work? What about those local companies we have in our constituencies? Or what is the role of our constituencies in this issue of monitoring these installers? It is not clear to me, Chairperson, whether it will be the government of the provinces who's going to monitor all the work that will take place. And I'm worried if you are saying by June the work will start, maybe I'm not sure whether which province, because you are talking about two provinces, whereby we have nine provinces. But I want to make sure to know, what about the local businesses? Local businesses, how do they fit in this process? Also, in page 7, this information, Chair, is complicated. They are talking about the Public Works EPWP. Where we are? Who's going to do this work? In page 7, you're complaining installer capacity within Public Works. Maybe I'm not following the information, but I want to be clear about the local businesses, and what about our consequences? How do they fit in this issue?
Okay. Any other hand, before we go to SABC on this presentation, make a follow-up, Honourable Fanda.
Thanks, Joe. Just a quick one. There has been some comments from people in the sector that the technology that is currently being used is actually obsolete. And what needs to happen is that there needs to be actually an actual review of the digital migration policy. Is that something under consideration?
Can we get the response, and then after that we go to SABC?
Thanks, Chair. Let me start with the issue raised by Honourable Fandam, and then the teacher will go, and Mr. Mitchell will go into the technical in terms of the training and other issues. Indeed, if you look at technology, if technology, even phones and everything, electronics are a bit of a challenge. After 5 years, they become an issue. That's why you can see in the presentation we're talking about both STV and IDTV, because we're cognizant of the times and what is moving. So we are considering, what is fortunate is that when the policy was being passed, both the set-top boxes, the STB and IDTV, were incorporated into the policy. So we don't have to review policy, but we can change the implementation model of it. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. The installer database versus the EPWP program. In the previous committee meetings, there was a report that the department has entered into a memorandum of understanding between DPW and the department. DPW has committed to train 10 young people per individual local municipality. If you look at, for an example, a municipality big as Machosana, it's big that 10 people cannot service that municipality. So what we are doing as the department, working hand in hand with the local municipalities, is to go to a particular area and the village and the municipality and say, from this local municipality, how many people who are able to do installation, who are qualified installers, who can assist in the program, to come and register on the database. Once they register on the database, what we are going to do is to utilize those local people through the USASA process to assist with the installation of the devices, while Public Works is training these young 10 young people. The process has started in the Lijolepusa district municipality where we have started with the pilot of this training. Once they complete the training, they will be fitted into the pool of the installation companies that are there. So to answer the question about what about the local companies, those are the companies that we need in those respective areas to be involved in the installation. We have learned, Chair, that the countrywide, we don't have sufficient installation teams in that can service a particular municipality. And as a result, that is why we had a situation where some people were coming from other municipalities to another municipality. But to answer the question, we are generating database so that we can use those local companies, local individual installers who are qualified to do installations in those respective areas. And we are training young people to supplement the capacity that is within the respective areas.
How are you generating the database?
Through
because the question that she's raising is about the local people benefiting in the whole.
Yes. We go to them for an example, Lijolepusa district municipality, we went there, we established a steering committee which is comprised of three representatives from individual local municipality. It's a community development, it's a public participation to assist with the community development workers to run and drive the awareness and registration campaigns. It's a local economic development to assist with the generation of database. They go and place an advert out to the public, local radio and public media to invite those who are qualified companies or individuals to register on the database so that when we come to do a focused rollout, we'll utilize those local people. And the third one is to ensure that the public works have a direct engagement with the municipalities to identify young people to be trained as installers of these devices in the local municipalities.
Clarify, but also, Minister, you see the storage issue. It's over a number of years now, and my question was that it was never answered. Who's paying it? What impact does it have if it's paid by DOC? Because surely, all this time, there is a lot of impact.
Let me start with your chair. Indeed, the storage it was not something that was built into the project. So it's a cost that we shouldn't have incurred, but we are incurring it, and we are carrying it out of the project. So we are paying because SAPO can't keep them for free. I mean, they have in that. It was not envisaged. I think when they looked at the plan from USASA's point of view, they went and procured, and the understanding was that as people register, because we anticipated that people will register in numbers, therefore they'll move. So it was moving from here, from the warehouse of the manufacturer, to SAPO distribute across, and then they move. But because of the uptake, then we ended up with them in the storage. That's why we are saying we are clearing them, because we don't want such a situation. It's a cost that we shouldn't be incurring that we are paying. On the issue of incorporation of local players, one is that majority, when we looked at the numbers, we do not have necessarily ready trained installers. So we looked at the numbers. We've called for those who are already trained so that we can incorporate them at every local area, because we do not have the capacity. Now, having looked at that, now it was identified that there's a gap. Now, part of that closing the gap was to partner with Public Works to say, can we train local? We don't take, for example, there was an incident where in one area we took some people from another province, let's say Gauteng, they went and installed, and the community protested to say, you can't have that. So we fixed that to say installers shall be people who are coming from that area so that it assists us. So that's how we're incorporating the people on the ground. We continue to update, talk to people when we are there to say, when you are an installer, through public messaging, through radio, community radio station messaging, and through local councillors as well, because that's why we have brought in the local municipalities so that they can assist us in getting some of the information out and also giving us some of the information. But I must say, Chair, we have a limited number of installers in the country that are already trained. So for us to meet the targets and to meet what we need, we might have to, as we were saying, put more money into training. But equally, don't want to overtrain, because once we train them in big numbers after the project, then what happens to them? So that's another issue. So we can train as a short-term method. They have an income. We can be happy. We'll be contributing towards issues of job creation. But long-term, there might not be sustainability, because we want that after we're done, these people must continue to be sustainable in the sense that they must service the market that is already available. Thanks, Chair.
Let's go to SABC.
Thank you very much, Chair, and for the opportunity just to come and explain the matter. Let me start by saying, Chair, the committee would be aware that both myself as the minister together with the board were appointed on the same day, and on that same day a court judgment was delivered. It's a court that was brought by SOS against the minister of, I'm just saying SOS and others against the minister of communication. Now, in that matter of that judgment, when the judgment was delivered, we looked at it, we sought legal advice. When seeking legal advice, and I'm saying we as government, Chair, because my responsibility in SABC is of a shareholder representative. So I'm representing government in SABC. So we looked at the matter, and then we came to a decision that we should appeal the court judgment. We appealed the court judgment. I did take the board into confidence prior to lodging the papers. They were doing their induction when I engaged with them. I did indicate that we will appeal. Not that we were seeking permission, because as a shareholder, we had to look at what is best interest for the country. Now, in that, it's because we had realized that the court judgment does not have only implication to SABC, but broadly to other state-owned entities. So that's one. We lodged the appeal, Chair. When we lodged the appeal, there was now an interdict that was brought. When the interdict was brought, we consulted a senior counsel to look at the matter, and we believe that there is no need for us to fight, because we agreed with some of the issues that the applicant was bringing, in this case, SOS. So we initiated a process of a declaratory order that it must be signed, Chair. And that was signed, it was a, what is, I don't know what is the correct wording of it, but I think it was approved or something. By the 6th of December 2017, the legal people will know the right wording, so I'll just say. In that, Chair, and I think I need to re-emphasize my position even to the Portfolio Committee. As the Minister of Communication, I do not have intention or I do not want to appoint nor fire executives, because that is the responsibility of a board in any state-owned entity. But where it's important for us is to be consulted as the, as government. Now, that's why the order, as you see it, as I'm saying, Chair, clarifying that we initiated the process of the declaratory order, because we felt that it's not important for us to fight even where there's no necessary to fight. And we said, if we can be allowed in the process when the board either fires or hires executives, they consult. And that has been in the declaratory order that has been issued, a declaratory order of the 6th of December 2017. Now, that's what has happened. In the process, Chair, then the SABC, we agreed with the SABC board that they must initiate the processes they've been involved in terms of finding executives, as we have committed that it's a priority to make sure that the entity is stabilized, one, in terms of executive, but two, in terms of finances, as you are aware that there are challenges in terms of finance. And part of the issues, when you engage Minister of Finance, one of the issues that is very stringent on, it's around executive boards and executives. So from Cabinet's point of view as well, through the IMC that is overseeing state-owned companies, very stringent on the processes, ensuring that we have the right people, we have quality and people who cannot take us back to where we see ourselves in terms of government with state-owned entities. So there is really strong emphasis. There is work. I'm part of that team as an IMC member, where we are looking even to the point of limiting even how many boards you can serve in as a member, the qualifications that people should have at serving at board level. So there is seriousness in terms of government to make sure that our state-owned entities, governance comes right, and that's the stream. And equally from my side, Chair, as a shareholder representative in the portfolio, I must say that I've also emphasized to the board that I would not be interacting with the board directly. I would work through the chair, who I would meet regularly to say these are the views, give feedback where there is a need. If there's a need for the board to say, no, we need to bring four people, we need to do this, that is happening. So that's the relation, Chair. I'm clarifying that as well so that it can be understood. I picked up a sense that, and sometimes because maybe when I remember when I joined the executive and I was appointed in energy, the chair there told me that, unfortunately, Minister, you're arriving in an environment where there is trust deficit. And I think even on this portfolio, there are those consequences of trust deficit, that even when you are in a good faith trying to do something, is perceived in a different manner. So I'm taking this, Chair, in that background to say there could be trust deficit, that there is always suspicion that I could be doing something wrong, and therefore, hence, I wanted to come up front and say this is what we are doing. So in the process, the board has been engaged in their process of recruitment. And I'm not going to delve into much the issues of the process, Chair, because there hasn't been. They can explain, the chair of the board and the HR chair can explain, but I don't want to compromise anything, and I'll explain my role. Now, in that process of everything that has been happening, explaining court order, that's my understanding of where I stand. Now, comes January, I see this, and I'm specifically going to what, because I don't want to compromise internal processes of recruitment. come January, I see an article saying that Mr. Maruleng has been appointed into SABC. I ignored it because I told myself, ah, it's one of those leaked stories, whatever, it's no merit. I checked with the team, has SABC issued anything? No, there's nothing from SABC, so we kept quiet. Until I received a call from presidency, after seeing Mr. Maruleng accepting congratulatory messages. And then they asked me, what is happening? And I said, obviously, because I didn't know that there's anything like that, I said, no, there's no such. Then I was sent the link. I also communicated to the chair to say, hey, man, there's this thing that is coming up. I'm being asked to explain. I think it's best that you also try and issue a statement. I will have to explain to the leadership because I'm not representing myself. Equally, I was asked to explain, a lot of colleagues to say, but what is happening? But eventually, Chair, we had to clarify. That's when I issued a statement to say, as far as we are concerned, as far as we know, there isn't a formal appointment that has been done. The board will have to do every process. Once they are done as well, come through to us and say, we are done with the process. This is what we are recommending. And then as a shareholder representative, because if the court order says I shall be consulted, it's not necessarily me because I don't represent myself. That's why we had said that I will have to take it to cabinet for cabinet because cabinet represents the shareholder in terms of government. So I'll have to take it to cabinet for cabinet. Not for cabinet to appoint, for information at cabinet and consultation at cabinet, Chair. So that's the matter, where I stand on the matter, Chair. I have no issues against any individual, any South African that qualifies to be appointed, that the process has been followed to the latter, that we do not have problems, that I don't have an issue. My responsibility, Chair, is that of oversight, because if tomorrow it is to be found that, let's say, for example, the board has flouted the rules, because I'm a shareholder representative and I have the obligation of oversight over the board, I will be asked to answer. Both yourself here in Parliament will be calling me to come and answer. How did it happen under my watch? So that's the only thing, Chair. Because the statement was issued in the context that, as far as we are aware, having understood and agreed with the board in terms of what should happen in terms of the consultation and as well in the background of that court order, we understood that a process has not been concluded and therefore we can't have a person already accepting congratulatory message because it sends the wrong signal. It needs to be the board that announces that this has happened, or it needs to be from a point of communicating from a government point of view to say we also are aware of this appointment. That's all, Chair.
I won't be long, but as a member of this committee, I must be clear when I go out because the society are watching the TV, listening to us. So I must be clear when they ask any question. Minister is mentioning the issue of 10 people they were trained as installers, if I'm correct. I want to know about those people. Where did you get those people? What criteria did the department use to select those 10 people? Who are they?
I passed that item. And we because it's information that we can get from the department. We are now on the issue of SABC. And what I would suggest is that on that process, there needs to be some communique clarity given, so that all members can, because we are from constituencies, are aware of what is happening in their constituencies. I think that's what worries Honourable Machobe. Unfortunately, I passed that item. and I'm now on SABC. Get that communique so that we are aware in our constituencies what we can do when we communicate with our people there. Right. Can are there questions on the SABC process that she has raised? Here, she has raised. Honourable Van Damme, you wanted.
Chair, I thought you'd let the board speak first, or can we ask the minister?
I think the minister outlined the process of consultation between her department and the board. We can raise questions. If the board wants to respond, they can. Honourable Van Damme and Honourable Ndlozi.
Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Sedi.
Thanks, Chair. I think the orders are very clear. Was it an interim order? The minister referred to it as a declaratory order, whatever it is. I think it was an interim order. Said that the minister must be consulted, but she doesn't have any veto powers. It didn't say that consultation extends to cabinet. It said to the minister of communications, which I think is very clear. I mean, if the intention was to include cabinet, would have said consult the minister and cabinet. It didn't say and cabinet. It said the minister. Now, I understand what the minister is saying. She says she's acting in good faith. I think there's absolutely a trust deficit. We are very, very scarred about previous appointments that have been made at the SABC, undue interference by the minister. So I think we must be, as a committee, very vigilant in our oversight over this. So what's unclear for me, though, is what the consultation was. Did any consultation happen at all? I think the board or the minister can answer this question. And what was the form of consultation? Because as I understand it, it says the consultation says, you must inform the minister saying we are considering X person for this position. The minister may, give input and say, I think this is good, I think this is great, or I disagree on that point. But ultimately, the decision is of the board, is the board's decision. So I'd like to know what the timeline was. What was the consultation? Was the minister sent a letter saying this is the person we're considering of appointing? And then how did, if the process, as the board says, is still ongoing, how did Chris Maruleng start accepting congratulations if the process was still ongoing? So those are the two points that are very unclear for me. One, what was the consultation that happened? And two, was Maruleng actually informed that he's been appointed?
Thank you. I want to read the minister her statement. It's very short. It says it is the minister's. Okay, let me start it from scratch. Minister Mamoloko Kubai Ngubane clarifies process of appointment at SABC executives. The Minister of Communication has noted the media reports about the appointment of COO at SABC. The minister wishes to advise the media that all appointments of COO, CEO, and CFO of state-owned entities are done through cabinet processes, and therefore the announcement of the outcome are made by cabinet. This is the minister's statement. It is the minister's responsibility to present any appointment of executives of state-owned entities under Department of Communication through cabinet process. To this end, the minister has no knowledge of any official appointment of a COO of SABC. So this is not a confusion that we have. It's what you have said, that the cabinet even announces who the COO must be at the SABC. It's wrong. It's not true. It's a direct contradiction of the court order that you spoke about. So I don't think there was a confusion or a bad faith. I don't speculate. I think there was a bad faith. I think you were up to something, Minister. I think you must tell us what it is. Did you want a specific candidate in the SABC or not? And when they disagreed with you, did you want to stop the appointment of this person? That's a direct thing that we must say. This statement says you've interfered in the processes of the SABC and you defended it publicly. So if there was a confusion, I'm not sure what that confusion is, because the reports are not saying anything. It is your statement which is admitting an interference. So I'm not reading media reports. I'm reading your statement and I'm reading an interference. It's dangerous. So we have to present this as fact, Chairperson. That in the statement, it's an admission. It's an admission of interference. Not a media report or a Sunday Tribune or something or a tweet. I've just read for you the philosophy in the head of the minister and why she disputes that there can be an appointment. In fact, she believes that there must be a cabinet meeting in which it announces who the SABC COO is in this statement. So the question of interference for me is a fact, admitted here. Now, I want to pose this question also to the board, and I want to warn all of you that to speak in parliament is to speak under oath. Don't lie. Don't mislead parliament. Don't mislead the public. What happened? Is there still interference in the SABC by a minister? I want to warn you, because you're not the, you don't have the monopoly of information. Precisely because that institution is so much in carcass, it's going to hurt you if you respond to this question wrongly, because we'll give you evidence. Is there interference by the minister in the appointment of SABC executives or not? Thank you. Chair, and I want the response from the minister and from the board. They must both speak, and they must speak truthfully.
Thank you very much, Honorable Teddy.
My take is that the board of the SABC is here, and we it will be wrong for us to speak on their behalf. And I don't want to go into the discussion on the interference of the minister, but my take is that we have got a responsibility as parliament to make sure that people who qualify in all respects are appointed as executives in the SABC. When we recommended to parliament board members, this board, the current board that we're talking about, we said we hope this time around the SABC will go back to its glory. Surely we cannot afford to go back to a situation that led to us dissolving the board of the SABC. So we've got a responsibility. All I'm saying is that the SABC board is here. Can they take us into confidence and explain the process that led to the appointment of this person? Does this person qualify in all respects in terms of relevant legislation? So that tomorrow, these are the issues that will still come back to us as parliament. So all I'm saying is that we must not continue to speak on their behalf. Let them come in, explain all these processes, and take us into confidence whether the person that we're talking about qualifies, or where exactly is this process of appointment.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable City. Any other questions? We are trying to ensure that we don't go back to 2016. No, is it 2016? When we experienced a number of board members resigning in our meeting and say these things have been happening. I tender my resignation. You remember, members? So it's good that we have the board as well, so that you don't say you were suppressed 3 years down the line and resign here. So those are the few questions that we have. Members, questions are very clear. Minister, your statement was read by Honorable Ndlozi. Just on the statement, it was read here. Some clarity, because we are not in SABC, we are not in the department. We want to ensure that everything goes according to decisions. Minister.
Shall I allow SABC board chair and HR chair to lead? I'll follow. Because I think the questions in terms of the process and having not spoken,
yes.
I'd like to allow them to speak.
Yes. Mr. Makatini.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings, honorable members, and to the chair. I'm going to answer some questions, and some questions I'll refer to the chairperson of the HR and Remuneration Committee. The question around consultation, yes, there was consultation, and consultation was done in three forms. There were meetings between me and the minister, and there was also a meeting between me with the minister and some of the board members. On top of that, we had letters, basically where we were sort of communicating with the minister in terms of every step of the way and the decision that we were making as a board. And also the minister wrote to us. So consultation was done in that form. So there were meetings and there were letters and discussions. The question around how come that, the story came out in the media, as the board, we did not sanction that media report. What we had done, for us to be able to finalize the process of the COO appointment, we had to subject the candidate to vetting, security vetting. And for you to do that, you've got to extend a conditional offer so that the person can be comfortable to be subjected to the process. So we did confirm also in a letter to the minister that we have extended a conditional appointment subject to vetting, which is the process that we are busy finalizing. And that's why the statement issued by the board was that the process is currently being finalized. That's what we meant. I'm going to request the chairperson of the HR committee just to take us through the process of appointment, because that process happens within the HR and Remuneration Committee, jointly with Governance and Nominations Committee of the Board.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honorable Members. Thank you to Minister and her team. I will really just take us through the process so that it puts it into context. And I will start out by saying that this was a continuation of a process that had started previously. As you know, that when we appeared in front of this committee as the interim board, the matter of the appointment of executives was one of the requirements. When we did the handover to the permanent board, which we are also part of, we then also handed over the process to the permanent board. The permanent board met with the candidates that had been identified by the interim board and presented to the previous minister for recommendation. The permanent board satisfied itself that the recommendations met the criteria in terms of experience, in terms of qualifications. We verified qualifications and your usual criminal records and all those things, which we asked the agency that we have appointed to do those. We did reference checking, and we presented all that to the board. Once the permanent board had been appointed, the chairperson communicated with the minister, which I think minister has said, as well as the chairperson, indicating the names of the name of the preferred candidates. There was interaction. Minister did respond to that communication. As the chairperson has outlined, that there was a meeting that was held between the chairperson and the minister, as well as the minister and delegation from the board. So I think that addresses the matter of consultation as to whether there has been any consultation. There has been both meetings and correspondence to that regard. Maybe fast track to the end of the process, where post the judgment and the court order or the draft order that we refer to, the board once again via the chairperson communicated with minister on the decision to go ahead and make the offer subject to the vetting process, which had come through in the interaction with the minister as well, that there is no way we can appoint a person to a senior position at the SABC without a vetting having been confirmed. The statement that came, the article that came out in the press that inquired of the SABC as to whether we had appointed the gentleman to the position of COO. We also received inquiries from the media before it was published. We chose as a board not to respond. They were asking us for a statement. We chose not to respond, but the spokesperson of the SABC did say that we are in the process of an appointment, and we were therefore not going to communicate. It has always been our policy as a board that we do not communicate employee matters via the media. So to that end, we chose not to communicate. Subsequent to the minister's statement and further inquiries, where we were being asked once again whether specifically there was consultation or not consultation, we chose to respond and talk to the court order. That and outlined because there was a question as to whether we were complying with the court order or not by even making the offer. So we chose to respond to what the court order said, and that as a board we believed that we have and continue to follow the process as outlined by the court order. So where we are now is that we need to conclude the process. I think there are questions that have been asked on qualifications, competence, and all that. And when I responded to say that we had checked references, we had done what we believe in the typical HR arena is what you need to test whether a person is appropriate, check of qualifications and all that. And we had certified ourselves as a board that even as we recommend the candidate to minister, that the person does qualify in that regard. I trust that that does outline the process. If there's anything that I've left out, we can respond.
Okay. Okay. That's the explanation, members, Minister, and then I've come to you.
Yeah, I think, colleagues, there's an issue around what Honorable Van Damme raised about the minister, that the court orders his minister. And we need to go back and understand the role of the minister in terms of the executive authority when it comes to the state-owned entities. As I said, colleagues, I do not represent myself. Because if you are, because that, there's guidelines on how we do things in government, and in terms of when you sit, when you're saying you are an executive authority,
and a shareholder represent. Because the Minister of Communication, the reason why the court order will say the Minister of Communication, it could have said Minister. It's Minister of Communication because the Minister of Communication is a shareholder representative at SABC. Now, you couldn't go into a court judgment and put all those details as shareholder representative. It's that context, and that's the interpretation, unless if our lawyers are misleading us. But that's the interpretation in terms of the law. That's interpretation, as we said. Hence, even in my statement, Honorable Ndlozi, I would make reference, because as a minister in the department, I have delegated powers from the president. So president, as the head of state in terms of the constitution, will delegate powers to ministers, and then ministers will delegate certain powers to the director general. Now, the powers I have are delegated powers. That's why you could see even in certain cases the reference we can make to various cases where ministers were found wanting because they have upset the powers and made them themselves, their powers. Now, these powers are represented. I'm representing government. And government in this context is cabinet because that's where it's sitting. You have government of the day voted in, and the people who take decisions on behalf of government, or if you are to consult, that is as cabinet. That's the spirit of the statement. Not to mislead, not to interfere. That's why even every time I've always taken calls to say and explain to the nation to say, I do not want to be the hiring and firing. I'm not involved in the process of selection and all that. If as they come into consultation, you say, what are these weaknesses? Are you picking up this weakness? That's not interference. You are cautioning so that you are satisfying yourself. You've applied your mind. And this, we are doing this cognizance, honorable members. But today, I mean, we are held liable as ministers, personally liable. So I must satisfy myself that I've done my job. And I can go back and say, even when you ask me, honorable minister, Kubayenguban, as per your responsibilities and the duties that has been given to you, have you done your job? If I've sat with the board and said, are you cognizant of this? Can you do this? And we agree on a process. That process must be followed to the letter. As the board chairperson and the HR chairperson has said that the process has not been concluded. And that's my concern, that how do we have this matter in the public space when the process has not been concluded? If it was just a leak, it's fine. I could have easily ignored it. But for the individual to accept congratulatory message, it sent a wrong signal. And more than anything, let me just explain, honorable members. Yes, SABC is a public entity. It's a public broadcaster, not a state broadcaster. But the reality is, for and the financial viability and issues needs proper governance. When we meet with lenders, when we meet with rating agencies, there are things they raise with us. Now, we are conscious as ministers, and especially myself, I'm very conscious to make sure that we are not found wanting when we are questioned, Chair. If rating agencies are to say, but your normal process of appointment as this government on state-owned entities or whatever you call, in terms of PFMA, Honorable Ndlozi, SABC is classified under Schedule 2. Now, we might have to go back and correct the state-owned entity issue from a PFMA point of view. Because if you are to talk, it's false. It's a public broadcaster, but it is an entity of government. It's a state-owned entity because government is 100% shareholder of SABC on behalf of the people of South Africa. So now the government of the day is there, and therefore we are saying, in terms of the process, because part of the responsibility we have as government is to be able to outline how we govern, how we have regulatory environment, including what Treasury will put as responsibilities. Now, in the environment where SABC is, we have to make sure that we are cognizant of the environment, not only in terms of governance, but to have an institution that has credibility, to have an institution that South Africans can trust that the right things are happening in the right manner. And that's my interest, to represent South Africans very well. I have no interest of interfering or bullying or doing anything to the board. I'm very clear in engagement. If there's issues, I call, as Chair said, we meet, And I've made that point that the chairperson of the board is my point of reference. If we meet on an issue and we agree to say this needs other people, we bring in other members. We've done that previously. It's not that there's anything that I'm hiding. There's no interference. I mean, I can safely say that. I mean, even being at SABC, I've been once since I've been appointed, and I think it's a record time for all.
Yes. You have to go. Can I? Because she apologized for 12 o'clock. Can I give it to her?
Thanks, Chair.
And then Honourable Matisha. And then you will follow Honourable Dozier.
Thanks, Chair.
Finalize.
Thank you, Chair. This issue is very simple to me. There is a requirement that the minister must be consulted. She was consulted. The board must carry on and make the appointment. Whether about the minister's responsibilities to cabinet, to her political party, I engage it in a layo. The board has fulfilled what it needed to do in terms of the law, in terms of a court order. That's all we need to really be seized with. And I think they've done what they were required to do, and they must be given the space to make the appointments. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
I still have the responsibility, honourable members, to ensure that they follow the process to the letter. As they've said, the process has not been concluded, so the matter is not closed. Until they are finished, they will do the process, we agree. They will do to the letter, receive everything, we'll make sure that it's done. So you can't say, because they have consulted, I mean, I can't clearly say they've followed process. Tomorrow, if you ask me that they've breached their own process, what am I going to say? If they don't receive the security clearance and they announce, are you not going to, and then something happens, are you not going to ask me to say, but you have the duty to ensure that the process is followed? So that's the issue. They will do their part, finish it. It's not about utawingen, it's about process, honorable member, that we must ensure that the process is followed to the latter. There we agree.
I don't think this thing must be between the two of you. But I think what's very clear, Yonke Nyinto must put aside, but there is consultation, as I hear, between the minister confirmed by the board on this process. And the last thing that the board raised was that there is a vetting process. Among the processes that they are following, there is vetting. I think I heard that. And the process is not concluded, I think, because there are still those issues that they are dealing with as the board.
My point is, Chair, though, the minister's role has ended. The only role she has was to be consulted. Anything else she does beyond that is interference. That's my point.
That's her point. That's not the conclusion. It's her point. Honourable Matisha, I'll come.
I truly think that there is a problem. And in my own opinion, this has got to be re-looked. There is a very serious problem. What the minister, in my opinion, has said is actually contradicting. She contradicts herself. Okay? The SABC board there says, number one, to quote you, you say, quote unquote, there were meetings between me and the minister. Okay, that's the chairperson there has said. The second statement, quote unquote, I wrote a letter to ensure that vetting was done. That is the first thing that you have raised. And what I want to point out is that, number one, albeit the minister may not be sitting at the board meetings frequently, etc., etc. She is a member of the board. Okay. By virtue of the fact that she represents the owners, permit me to say, of the SABC, and these are the people, she is there, but then she does not have the power alone to simply say, yes, this has been done. Because in my, what I've heard is that she has said, yes, I've not done this, but yes, I've done this, etc. And that, I believe, is a very serious problem. And I think this whole thing has got to be relooked so that we truly have what has got to be established. We have a person. You spoke about the vetting, etc. Are you able to give us the results? We need to have that. I mean, I'm not saying that persons from outside of South Africa must not be put into this major positions, etc. I wonder if that was checked as well. Okay? I know the gentleman spoken about here is from Zim. When you handled the whole thing of vetting, etc., was that looked at, you know, as well, etc.? I would propose that that be explained, okay? Right? But then I think there's a great deal of contradiction in a number of areas.
I think that my interest is to separate the two. I'm not interested in the in turning this into some Sunday afternoon salad. Where is your place as the ministry in relation to the appointments in the SABC? Who gets appointed will debate when that comes to us. If the competence and so on and so forth. It has not been presented to us yet. Because they are arguing, they are still going through the process. They've given a conditional offer. And if the media is reporting about the conditional offer, so what? As long as the process according to the court order has been sustained. Again, I mean, my worry here is that why having a minister who's not willing to take the advice or at least the clarity from Parliament. So let me make an attempt again. I'm going to read the court order for her. Paragraph 1.3 says the board will make any permanent or interim appointment of an executive member as envisaged in paragraph 1.1 above only after consultation with the Minister of Communication. With the phrase after consultation to have the meaning set out in the matter Premier Western Cape versus President of the Republic of South Africa, 1993, especially paragraph 85. What does paragraph 85 say? Paragraph 85, and I think most importantly is the last sentence. The result is that the minister must have regard to the views of the MEC concerned, but is not bound by them and can direct such interference, such transfers take place against the wishes of the provincial government. If you read this in relation to the SABC, is that the result is that the SABC must have regard to the views of the minister concerned, but is not bound by them. Why do we say that, Honorable Chairperson? We say that because the minister says in her statement, it is the minister's responsibility to appoint to present any appointment of executives to the cabinet through cabinet processes. She also says in state-owned entities, cabinet processes must go through cabinet processes. Therefore, the announcement of the outcome are made by cabinet. And this is the problem and the confusion. You don't announce the appointments of the SABC minister. Because if you do, it means you are appointing them when the court order says you are not. The appointing authority is the board. So I thought that that is clear. That's number one. Whether you go and talk with Zuma or you don't, I'm not sure. I don't get involved. I'm not even getting involved with whether ministry means cabinet or what. The point is, they consult you and they are not bound by your opinion. Even if that opinion can be the opinion of cabinet, it doesn't bind them. They can wake up tomorrow and make a decision of their own because it is the public broadcaster. That would be possible maybe in other state-owned entities, but not here. Because that's why the matter went to court, and there was a court order. So your opinion, it can be, I don't know, beautiful, whatever. It doesn't bind them. So that is the independence of the board. That is the independence of the SABC. That's why it's not a state broadcaster. That's why it's a public broadcaster. It's because it's not bound by your opinion in relation to the appointment of executives. If that were to be the case, it would cease to be a public broadcaster. It would be a spaza shop of cabinet. It would be what it was under apartheid, essentially. And we can't leave this meeting when you don't understand this. Or at least you must be able to say you disagree with it, so that we know we have a crisis, Honorable Chairperson. That's the first point. The second point is a bit straightforward here. And that is, I want to caution these officials, both at the SABC and Cabinet. You see, you don't wait for speculations and so on and so forth. If the minister is interfering and you allow that as board members, you are failing in your responsibilities. If you don't tell us as members of parliament, I don't know for what reason, you will be failing in your responsibilities to protect the integrity of that institution. Interference would precisely mean her trying to bind you to her opinion. That would be in direct contradiction with the clauses that I've read. Threatening you with cabinet processes that you must wait when you have told her, we've heard you. We're not waiting for any cabinet and you don't have to. If she says, okay, I want to go and brief the president, that's fine, but you're not bound by her opinion of what you would have presented to her. That means the day she doesn't come back to you, you can still move on. Because you can't wait for opinion which is not binding. So consultation means you say, Minister, here is what we think. We want to move on with speed to stabilize the SABC. If she takes 3 months and says, no, because I must go and consult, you can move on without her. Because you are the state broadcaster. We must warn this board. Because we went through tough times and we tried to put them through the eye of the needle in front of the entire public. You must stand very firm. And in addition, you come here to tell us if the ministers are interfering with the appointment that you are seized with. Because her opinion really, in this case, is not binding. And that's the court order. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I don't think the committee has got any intention to appoint executive members of the SABC board because it is not our responsibility to start with. And I will make a concrete proposal, Chairperson. Maybe to assist us going forward. As much as we don't have, it is not our responsibility to appoint the executives of the SABC, but we have got a political responsibility to ensure that there is stability in the entity. Honorable Ndlozi said a mouthful. We have taken a lot of efforts to bring the SABC to where it is today. And it is our responsibility to do everything in our power to ensure that we don't go back to the issues that led to us dissolving the board of the SABC. That was a very painful decision, Chairperson. And I don't want to go back. And my concrete proposal is that we have listened to what the minister has said. We have listened to the board with regard to all these issues. I think we need a special session to talk about these issues. As I've indicated when I started, we don't have an intention to appoint the executives of the SABC because it's not our responsibility. But we've got a political responsibility to ensure that proper things are done in the SABC in running the affairs of the public broadcasting. Because if things go wrong, they'll still come back to us. As much as we're saying it's not our role to appoint the executives. So all I'm saying, Chair, my group proposal is that we need a special session of the portfolio committee to process this particular matter and pronounce ourselves very clearly where do we stand with regard to all these issues.
The proposal, members, that we had the report on processes and up to this point, and processes of consultation are still continuing. We then come back and engage on the report. I think this is what you are saying, because we have meetings every Tuesday. Can we live with that, members? So that we don't spend the whole day on this matter. It's very critical, Your Honor. It needs time. Before you, Minister, let's hear Honorable. Do you want to come back on Alphatish on the proposal?
Yeah, permit me to say yes, I agree. However, the questions that have been raised, if they could be responded to, I think that will be okay. But then the actual debate and, taking up of the action, that will happen when we come back, as he has proposed. But then if we could be clarified and questions have been raised, that would help.
Honorable Machoba.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I support the motion of having our special session as a committee because there are many outstanding clarities. You remember, my question was still not clear about the answer. So we must have that meeting as soon as possible, Chair, because we need that clarity, many clarities from the department. Thank you, Chair.
You want to come back? I'll be coming back to you, Honorable Kalakona. Yes.
No, Chair, I don't agree. No, I think we're fine. We've got the guidelines here, the court order, and that's what we expect these people to do. We shouldn't come back to this matter. We must not be held at ransom by the minister or anyone else. Clarifying this matter again on a different occasion. The marching orders are clear of what is expected to happen. Let's not mince our words. Secondly, if the proposal is regarding set-top boxes or it's regarding us hearing about the report of the SABC in full, that is in the program as far as I'm concerned. There's no special meeting that is needed. And Honorable Machoba must push if she wants to know who the 8 people who have been trained are, she must be given an opportunity to be told. We don't need a special meeting to discuss what?
Honorable Kalako?
No, thank you, Chair. No, I wanted just to comment on the proposal, Chair, and just the difficulty I have with it. I think as a committee we can clarify with ourselves on these issues. But I don't want that proposal to have an implication that the board must not move with this work. And whatever discussions they have with the minister as part of a stakeholder there, I think that must move, because what we are interested in is the filling of those top positions in the SABC. I don't want this thing of delaying. I have, for instance, although I didn't want to get to this debate of cabinet, the minister, the board. It's good that because we can have different interpretations on that. To me, the focus must be just as if this one is clarified, and I'm clear in my mind what the board have told us, including the minister. They were just clear that they are still continuing with the processes of vetting. Once that is finalized, all processes must move. My fear was that we must not, whatever we're proposing, stop without those processes to move, Chair.
No, that was not my understanding, too. Because we're saying the processes of consultation, including the vetting process, continuing. I think that was the issue. So there is nothing stopping. But the issues that were raised, who does what, and all of that, those are the issues that we can engage, because we are clear the board appoints. And that's what the minister was saying. The board appoints, but not undermining the process of consultation that they are engaged in. I think this is what you were all saying. And I accepted the proposal on those basis, because we really need to move forward. And I agree, Honorable Kalako, it doesn't stop the process at all. Can we agree that we will finalize this one? Zanum Sebenzwenu, together with the minister, as we have started. And then we'll get a report of what has been finalized when we meet you again. I think that proposal, for me, Ka said, was saying we'll then get the final report when we come back again. Agreed? Are there any outstanding questions that needs to be responded to? Yes, Minister.
Chair, I think the issue raised by Honorable Madisha, who wanted to know if vetting has been concluded and if the committee can have access to the vetting report, we'll have to check in terms of that. Remember, I'm not so sure if we're allowed to circulate the vetting report. We'll have to check that. I don't think it is allowed. But we can check in terms of Parliament. I know to the third party you can't. If it relates to Parliament, I'm not so sure how that can be handled. It has not been finalized. The report I got last week, Friday, from State Security was that the minister was indicating that they only received the forms, I think, last week, Wednesday, back from the person. So there wouldn't be any. But and I think, Chair, from my side as a minister, I need to reiterate this. There is no intention of interfering. I agree with your summary. I do not want to appoint. I do not want to fire. But I think I need to bring to the attention that members, you need to know that this is an interim order. As I said, Chair, it's like three cases on one. We are still on the process of the appeal. So the final, so that tomorrow you don't say I'm misleading Parliament when I come back, if there's a different court decision. So we are, this was in relation to the interdict. There is a process where we are saying the judgment has been based on a wrong MOI, therefore it must be set aside, that judgment, because it was based on a document that was not registered with the CIPRO. So that's another issue. So once we come back, it will be very clear. And I think we need to continue. I think Honorable Ndozi was talking about the issue of the independence of SABC. The editorial independence, as per instructed by the Constitution, stays checked. But SABC remains under the custodian of this government on behalf of South Africans. That's what the Constitution says. Thank you.
Now go to ICASA, Minister, before you leave. I know you apologized. Yeah.
Okay. I think we've got councillors who are here, as I explained that the appointed chair could not be here. The presentation is in front of us. I'm not going to waste much time.
Yeah.
I'm going to allow the team, together with the CEO, it's the councillors together with the CEO, the chair of the, it's the committee who will take us through. The presentation. Thanks. It's coming this way.
Casa, go ahead and introduce yourself and the team. Where is the CEO? Why are you sitting very far? Okay, Councillor. Councillor, go ahead.
I've forgotten how the technology works here. Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon to Minister and Honourable Members. We are a team of licensing and regulating, but also giving a briefing to the committee on the broadcasting sector compliance levels. I am with the CEO of the entity, ICASA, Mr. Willington Ngwepe. I'm also with Councillor Mogele. I'm also with two experts, the General Manager for Compliance and Consumer Affairs, Elise van der Walt, and also the General Manager for Licensing, Leah Maena. My name is Bali Sakadi. I'm also a co-chair of the broadcasting sector. We deal with issues of compliance. I think, Chair, also this request comes at an opportune moment for us in terms of how we have worked in terms of the review of our regulations. We're currently busy with that process in looking at the bottlenecks, but also looking at how best we can be on the road in terms of interface with our community structures and entities, to put emphasis on the challenges we have observed over time, including those of governance. We have seen particular trends with community broadcasting services, but also there are isolated incidences with the commercial. I think the report touches a bit in terms of that those incidences relate to promise of performance from their side. One thing that we can confirm here is that our monitoring systems, as far as compliance is concerned, is based on international standards and international practice. ICASA moves from time to time, working with international bodies, but also in the continent, we seem to be providing much advisory in terms of how best to work on the regulatory framework for broadcasting matters. And also our hand in the system is also very supportive in terms of supporting the entities, and we are not as punitive as indicated by the regulations, because we want to take along especially the communication broadcasting sector, how best they can deal with the issues of governance. We have many other issues, but what is key is the process that is in place as mandated with our Complaints and Compliance Committee, which is the CCC. It's a body that presides over these issues that are going to be discussed here. It's also part of the CASA Act, Section 17B. So we are on course. Chair, I'm going to hand over to Councillor Mogale to take us through in terms of the state of affairs insofar as community broadcasting is concerned.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kadi.
Okay.
I'm sure members will recall that this is the new councillor who just appointed towards the end of last year. It's what we call a baptism of a fire. Immediately she comes in, then... okay, over to you, ma'am.
What is happening to Ruben Mohlaloga? Yeah, I'm sorry if I was late.
No,
but do you want to abreast me as a team member?
No, I think the minister was very clear on that one. When we started the meeting, so she gave us a report on what's happening.
Which I will see in the minutes, or you're going to address me. So I can engage this delegation with a clear conscience.
No, we'll brief you. The matter is in good hands of the minister.
Mm. Can I proceed? Thanks, Chair. ICASA welcomes this opportunity to discuss issues of compliance with the committee. And as Councillor Kadi has indicated, that we have, from a compliance and monitoring perspective, ICASA follows best practice, international best practice. But also I just want to add that as a regulator, we see this function not as a punitive one, but as an enabler. Because at the end of the day, we regulate in the public interest, and monitoring and compliance and enforcement issues go to the heart of how public interest gets realized. And I just, I think from the perspective of the presentation that we're going to be giving, we're trying as hard as much as possible to provide a comprehensive picture of what informs how we go about monitoring and enforcing. We give a picture of the processes that we follow, the systems that we apply. But also, I think we want to take this opportunity to make the committee aware of what compliance issues or enforcement issues that we have in our environment, and how we're going about to ensure that these are resolved in the interest of ensuring that one particular sector that is key to the broadcasting sector, which is that of the community broadcasting sector, remains sustainable and it serves South Africans in their totality and in their diversity. So the presentation covers 10 aspects. We talking to our compliance mandate and objectives, the relevant regulations that we are enforcing. We're giving a picture of the people that we're actually monitoring. By virtue of the broadcasting landscape, we actually go into the profile of the categories of licensing that we are servicing. We're talking to the daily compliance operational activities, annual compliance reporting. We specifically highlight issues that we've experienced in terms of individual broadcasting licensing compliance. Also, in relation to the class broadcasting licensees,
as I've indicated, we are an enabling regulator, so I'll also speak to the interventions that we're taking to assist community broadcasting licensees to comply. We're talking to the issue of the moratorium, which I think is a contentious issue in this space. But we also, as conclusion, we just want to give the committee a picture of the diversity and the kind of communities that are served by community broadcasting services. As I've indicated, the compliance mandate and objectives of ICASA are actually enshrined in law. This function is carried out by the Broadcasting Compliance Unit. And in this regard, we consider what areas that licensees must comply with. And this is the law, the ECA itself and the Broadcasting Act, relevant regulations, license terms and conditions, and amongst others, local content obligations for broadcasting licensees and the like. This slide talks to the relevant regulations. I think there's quite a few regulations that broadcasters have to comply with. But just to say that they pertain to various aspects of broadcasting, things like content, operation, reporting, and processes and procedures. Now, in terms of the broadcasting landscape, currently we have 330 licensees that provide broadcasting services. Of the 330, 271 are community sound licenses, 5 are community TV, 9 are subscription TV, 4 are free-to-air, from a commercial perspective, which is ETV, but also SABC 1, 2, and 3, and 27 are commercial sound licensees, 15 are public sound licenses. Of the 330, 247 are currently operational. And just to highlight also that of the 247, 196 are community broadcasters. Now, in terms of compliance operational activities, I think we have to view them within the context of the regulatory function of ICASA. So more than just being an administrative process or a bean counting process, it actually is much broader. It goes towards checking as to what impact our regulatory framework has on the system itself. So from a daily perspective, compliance operational activities comprise of ongoing compliance and monitoring of broadcasting licensees, being an enabling regulator, as I've said before, inspection visits to community broadcasting services. And I just think I need to highlight that it's not just so much inspecting whether or not people comply, but also to gauge that to what extent can the regulator provide support to these kinds of services, to, in particular, community broadcasting services, to comply. It's processing of notification for change licensing information, preparing of annual compliance reports. I think the reports are actually quite important because they don't just speak to whether or not people comply, but they give an indication of to what extent our regulatory system remains relevant and to what extent there should be changes in how we do things as ICASA. We also deal with collection of annual license fees, referral of non-compliance licenses to the CCC, which deals with processing of complaints. Now, in terms of annual compliance reporting, I think we should actually be quite clear to say that in terms of our reporting, we don't necessarily report on the entire numbers of broadcasting services or other services that I've indicated. However, we do that retrospectively in terms of a number of broadcasters that we sample. And the sample would be from individual broadcasting services which have a national coverage, have more involved processes and more involved requirements, but it will also be in terms of class licenses, which in this case becomes community broadcasting services. So I think the point that I just wanted to reiterate is that what we get from this is an indication of the general trends within the sector as such, and not in terms of individual broadcasters as such. But I think from this is in line with international best practice. So from our perspective, I think the reporting should be comprehensive enough to indicate where the main areas of challenges are, but also to indicate where the areas of intervention are required. Now, generally, in terms of compliance, we find that individual licensees who, by their nature, are national but are also public and commercial, tend to be very compliant. Most of the issues that we have around compliance in this sector has to do with issues that people have probably bound themselves in the process of application. So it would be promises of performance where in the licensing process, the broadcasters would have tried to indicate what areas that they are going to do over and above the normal regulatory requirements. And as the environment changes, as they go through their business cycle, it becomes very obvious that maybe sometimes these promises of performance are not really implementable. So the one area that we've experienced in terms of compliance in this regard really has to do with promises of performance. But there's also issues around local content. I think the example that we cited here of ETV is just one of the examples that of non-compliance that we've experienced. But just to highlight that generally this category of license, there isn't really compliance issues as such, and, but at least not to the extent that we've been experiencing in terms of class licensees. Now, class licensees, by their very nature, are intended to be an easy registration process. However, we found that through our experience in regulating that community broadcasting as a category of license has certain nuances and certain challenges that maybe that perhaps maybe a class registration process might not be an ideal tool to use to give people access to these kinds of licenses. Because by virtue of being a content service in itself, there are other nuances that really that you it's not something that you can just deal with administratively. It has to be a more involved process. Firstly, you need to ensure that the service that you're licensed is actually sustainable, that it actually goes to the heart of what the mandate of community broadcasting is intended to dispense. So our experience has been that by virtue of this process being so relaxed, not being as stringent as it previously was in the previous dispensation under the Independent Broadcasting Act, has resulted in a number of problems that we are experiencing that come across as being compliance issues. But I think the question that we then needed to ask ourselves as the regulator is whether or not we're dealing with these things at the surface, because the issue is actually deeper than just that. It's about how your processes that you put in place are used to select and license people that are best placed to dispense the mandate of community broadcasting in its truest sense, but also that they are capacitated to be able to do so. Because even if at face value that it appears that the requirements are more relaxed, the responsibility of a community broadcaster carries as much weight as you would any other broadcaster that does work on a commercial basis. Having said that, I just want to highlight for the committee that generally, we have found that there's non-compliance with regards to issues around governance, issues around management, issues around community participation. But more recently, we've also experienced issues around format, which means that because it's so much easier to get access to a community broadcasting license, the initial mandate of the kind of programming that should be coming across from a community broadcaster has been diluted. So as more people get licensed, as more as they get on air, they tend to gravitate away from the original format from which they had been licensed. And as I've indicated, ICASA, with regards to this sector, we take a developmental approach. We take a supportive approach, and we, before anything else, endeavor to support the licensee to ensure that they comply. It's almost like a hand-holding experience. So generally, we tend to be educative when it comes to the sector. So we conduct induction and compliance workshops for members of the board on their actual premises. Secondly, we assign, for every licensee, there is a compliance officer assigned to those licensees. So even though, as I've indicated earlier on, that when we report, we sample, but from a monitoring and engagement perspective, there is a resource that is dedicated to each and every licensee, and they endeavor to then assist them to comply with all aspects of their operations and content. So generally, we also undertake monitoring and regional inspection visits to licensees. We attend AGMs as observers. We mediate where there's dispute between conflicting parties or stakeholders or licensees. We also are proactive in terms of informing licensees in terms of areas of non-compliance, and we assist them by proposing remedies. So before the community broadcaster can actually be hauled, if I can use the term, before the CCC, there's quite a number of processes that, as the regulator, through the monitoring division unit of ICASA, assist this particular category of license to comply. Now, earlier on, Chair, I had mentioned that there's quite a number of issues that we have experienced in terms of compliance around community broadcasting, and I've alluded that this could partly be attributed to the relaxed licensing approach that came with the promulgation of the ECA. And as a remedy, the regulator then imposed in September 2015 a moratorium. Maybe just to highlight that the current presentation has changed a little bit from the slide. We've included more information. So what's on the screen is different from the presentation that you might have in front of you. But I think that the principle is common cause. The information that we're trying to communicate is common cause. It's just that the presentation that you have in front of you tends to provide more detail. So, but the point I was trying to make, Chair, is to say that the reason why you have a moratorium in place is due to a number of reasons. The first reason is that there's been a scarcity of frequencies, in particular around the urban areas. But also, I think it was a mechanism that the authority was looking to implement to ensure that the licensing process becomes much more thorough, it becomes much more coordinated and much more directed. But we've also timed the moratorium with quite a number of other processes that we were looking to improve around our regulation. One of the things that we're looking to do is to strengthen the standard terms and conditions to allow a process similar to what was under the Independent Broadcasting Act, where the authority actually directs the timing of the applications, and also to ensure that we now also have measures in place to, in the short term, address some of the challenges that we had experienced. For instance, the authority then amended the standard terms and conditions to allow a window period of application. We also then likewise amended the regulations to ensure that we deal directly with issues around community participation and commercial interference. However, these solutions are actually more short-term, and I think the authority needs to acknowledge from our side that the last time that we actually dealt with this sector from a comprehensive regulatory framework and licensing point of view, it has been quite a long time, and there's these issues that we now have to deal with. So we then had the moratorium in place, firstly to allow us to deal with the short-term interventions that I've spoken to, but also to ensure that by the time there is a licensing process, it happens within the context of a proper framework that addresses these issues structurally, not just on the surface. So what we're actually looking to achieve with the new framework which we are currently working with is to ensure that we revise the licensing process, obviously within the confines of the law, but we streamline it in such a way that firstly we're then able to direct the process of licensing. It doesn't just come up haphazardly as a classification process. And secondly, we put in place filters and mechanisms to make sure that, firstly, we're able to establish that the people that are applying for community broadcasting license do so in good faith to provide a service for community, not as a way of getting a commercial license through a shortened and not thorough process. But also to then ensure that the people that we actually license, we license them to thrive, we license them to be sustainable, and we license them within the context of a broader licensing framework, which is strategic. Because one of the things that we found as we did the research on in this area was that you would find a proliferation of services in the same area, competing for the same audience, providing the same service, and it obviates what the authority is trying to achieve in terms of diversity and in terms of giving people access to community broadcasting services. So that, in a nutshell, Chair, is why we have the moratorium in place. But I think we also need to point out that the moratorium is a temporary measure which we intend to lift as the authority once the framework is in place, the regulatory framework around community broadcasting is in place. I think, Chair, in terms of the way that we structured the process in the APP, we had intended that for this current year, this process becomes we do a draft, and it's something that we consult. So it should be within the first quarter / the second quarter of the new financial year. And the reason being is it needs to be owned. Whatever framework that comes out needs to be owned. And the authority is doing it in such a way that it's evidence-based, it's consultative. So we consult on paper in terms of the 45-day notice period that we would do gazetting it. But given the nature of this sector, we've then decided that we'll also do provincial visits. So I think I'm just putting into context as to why the process is taking so long. And, Chair, just to conclude, this is the slide that indicates the community broadcasting, the number of community broadcasting services that we have in South Africa per province. And I think the point that we are just trying to make, in terms of this slide, is to indicate to the committee that regardless of whether or not there's a moratorium in place, there is diversity of services, that communities still have a voice through community broadcasting services, given the numbers that we have in the geographical spread across provinces. But also just to say that, and to reiterate the point that as the regulator, we've taken a developmental and supportive role. So ICASA, together with MDDA and Centec, actually working to support growth in this sector. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think the presentation is very, very clear. But members, if there are issues, they can raise questions. I've raised my question of a moratorium, and the promise is that within first, second quarter of the next term, next financial year, yeah. So, because there are so many people who want licenses out there. Members, Honorable Jachen, Honorable Machoba, Matisha, in that order.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I only have one question. Part of my constituency, they've been asking many times for accessible TV to deaf people. Whether it's a sign language interpreter or whether it's subtitles, whichever way, we don't have full access. We pay for the license, TV license in full, but we don't get full services, or we don't get equal services as our colleagues, family members who are not deaf. We don't get what they get. Deaf people are still asking me to ask ICASA, when will we get a full service of broadcasted information? When? For example, Sona, if we don't remind the SABC to put in a sign language interpreter, we get messages during Sona, where is the sign language interpreter? When it comes to election time, the information is available, but the deaf community misses all of it, including myself. So we've been asking for many years. In the licensing or in the license and compliance, there must be access for people with disabilities. Is it there or is it not there in the licensing requirements? I see that everywhere in the communities always have a voice, everywhere. They have the radio stations. Why do we not have a voice? Why do deaf people not have a voice? Because the information is not accessible and broadcasting is not accessible. It is not necessary for us in this time to be reminding, for example, the Minister of Health makes 1st of December makes his present speech on HIV/AIDS. We don't have access to that. Whenever a minister speaks or the president speaks, there's always no access. So I'm requesting once again, can deaf people have full access to information? I don't want to have to repeat and talk about the pay channels who have almost 99% full subtitling, but of course most of the community cannot afford these pay channels. So I'm requesting, as from the deaf community and on behalf of the deaf community, can we please have access to TV? We cannot access radio stations, so can we please have access to TV? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. Mine, Chair, is very simple. Just to know about e-license. Do you have available license in ICASA to assist the communities who suffered for a long time to have licenses? If yes, how do you assist those communities? I don't want get Chair to personalize this issue of e-license. Because the second question I have, I suppose to direct it to the minister, because it needs a political solution. And I don't want to raise the issue of Kukuletu all the time, and I don't want to raise to you. It needs a political solution. But I just want to know, do you have the license? Is the licenses available for the communities? Thank you, Chair.
Mine is very simple. The question is, what do you want? I'm saying this because, Chair, when you go to the sitting there, he's going to speak on behalf of us, okay? And he must say to all the 400 members that this is what ICASA wants so that ICASA can deliver. Now, what I'm seeing here, of course, we have done well, albeit most of the issues have been raised in the past, okay? So hence I'm saying, what do you want now? To ensure that there is delivery in all these kind of areas. Because, I mean, if you there speak of 330 licensed class and individual broadcasting and you raised all those kind of problems which are there, and a whole lot of other areas. In my own opinion, you are not rising to say, albeit, yes, we have this kind of problems, we believe that this is what has got to be given to us by maybe Parliament and so on, so that we then can be able to go on and achieve all these good things. Hence I'm saying, what do you want? If you need anything at all, if you don't, please tell the chairperson to allow us to go back home. Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair.
Nothing. Few minutes, just few minutes, and then we close.
Hey, Chair, I'm going to hand over to Councillor Mogale, CEO, to deal with the facts and the specifics around that, and then I'll round off. Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair. I'll deal with the question about around accessibility, and I'll then hand over to the CEO to deal with the license availability, and also to deal with the operational requirements that ICASA have for us to be able to deliver. Just to say around the issue of accessibility, I think ICASA is mindful of the importance of broadcasting, access to broadcasting services to all South Africans. And as a result, we have revived the process of putting together regulations around ensuring that broadcasters and telecommunication services are accessible. This was, we've published draft regulations in the December period, and this process is currently underway. We are also looking to consolidate the process as soon as possible. I think the process was left hanging for a while, and we then decided to make the process public again so that we can get most current information in finalizing the regulations. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon to the honorable members. Just to deal with the two questions that have been raised, the first around availability of licenses for communities. I think, Chair, the straightforward response is no. As we sit here today, no one can apply for a community broadcasting service license. There is a moratorium, Chair, so because of that moratorium, we cannot issue licenses. And we wouldn't want to... We can get technical, Chair, and say when you look at the reasons why the moratorium has been imposed, one of them is spectrum scarcity. So if we were to take a place such as Guguletu, it will fall within the Cape Town metro. And it is in the metros that we have the biggest constraints. But if we were to take a rural town, say in Lephalale or, I don't know, Khoses, in that area, perhaps the spectrum constraint is not as dire. However, we still have to sort out the regulatory framework. We need to make sure that we come up with the rules that enable us to license in a sustainable manner. So spectrum scarcity is but one, but there are a whole lot of other factors which we have highlighted which require us to come up with a clear framework so that we can have a sustainable community broadcasting sector. So as we sit here, there are no licenses that can be granted. The question about what do we want, I think, Chair, it's a bit of a difficult one. I think we want a lot of things, but I don't know if the committee is the forum that could help us. So I'll give you an example. Councillor Mogale mentioned that when we do compliance, we have to do inspections of the community radio stations. We do sampling in terms of the content that's monitored. The reality is, as it stands, we cannot get to all the community radio stations because then that requires resources, it requires people. So we have started a process through which we're devolving some of these functions to the regional offices. So we're hoping that perhaps by the end of the next financial year, we will have a regional office in every province with the necessary headcount to to undertake the compliance function in respect of the community sector and provide the kind of support and guidance that we need to provide to community radio sector. So that's one part, which is the people. The second is continuously technology evolves, and our monitoring equipment also needs to be updated. So on an annual basis, we obviously have to go through a process of making sure that we modernize the equipment that our people use in undertaking this work. But those are some of the requests that we put through the budget process through the DOC as well as Treasury. Thank you, Chair.
There you are, members. Maybe we must say thank you very much, ICASA. Because we have other items to attend. Thanks for clear report, and I like when you say you don't want anything from us. I agree. That will have to go through the budget processes. You can't just say you want this now. But we must take that process. Thanks a lot, ma'am. Ladies and gentlemen, you are a man alone among a lot of women. You must be having problems. Thanks a lot. Members, there are minutes and the program. We won't deal with that, but we'll definitely review the program that was circulated and then circulated. I have instructed research unit in terms of the agreed study tour to add Britain and Germany. Again, the Britain and Germany, it's very easy because it's not two different areas or continents. If the two countries, which is Australia and Mauritius, is not agreed, then they must agree on Germany and Britain and Germany, because it's easy to catch a train from London to Germany. So we'll have to look at those, but we need motivation. We need that motivation to be circulated again to members, in addition to the Australia, Mauritius. And the indication was, the submission was that of end of April. Was it end of April? For traveling to these places. Because we said, what month is it? These old men are forgetting easily. But we'll have to look at the weather and all of that. So that will have to be done. Just that we're working with old men here, or Mr. Ngoma and the rest. So members will have to come back to you in terms of that. But it will have to be soon. Another issue that we'll have to put in our agenda is the Broadcasting Amendment Act this year, Honorable Kalako, so that we finalize it. Surely this one of FPB will have to go through maybe first term, because we're done, the processes are done. It's just to take it to Parliament and then it's finalized. But another act, Amendment Act, will have to be through this year. So those are the issues, members, that I thought we'll have to round up with, so that as we adjourn the meeting, at least we are clear on those matters. Program will have to be circulated to you. The last one is the critical one of the end of March, the training with Vets University. In your program circulated to you, we have 26th to the 30th of March. And we can't confirm anything if members don't confirm. A lot of money is going to be paid there, but we need to create space in our programs to be part of that training. That training assists us in understanding the sector itself. We'll have to confirm. The sector will check all of us one by one so that we can confirm with vets before the end of this week. Those who are here surely will have to confirm whilst we are here before we leave. But thank you very much, members, for coming, and thank you very much, our guests. And the meeting's adjourned. We can go home now. Thank you. Thank you.